Okay, for me, Jennifer.
All right, we are on the record, everyone. I'm going to call the House Committee on Rules to order for April 27th, 2017. I'm going to open a work session on HRC 19.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, HCR 19 designates Marionberry Pie as official pie of Oregon. We do have a dash one amendment, Madam Chair. It makes some clarity regarding how much Marionberry is produced in Oregon and where it's produced at. We have a no revenue and no fiscal statement on the dash one.
Thank you, Aaron. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, I move the dash one amendment to HCR 19.
Vice Chair McLean moves the dash one amendment to HCR 19. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Motion carries.
Madam Chair, I move HCR 19 as amended, thank goodness, to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair McLean moves HCR 19 as amended to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Really? None? Are there any?
Sure. You want some discussion?
Not really. Are there any objections? Motion carries. I think Representative Holby might want to carry this.
You bet.
I think so. A pumpkin fan.
Maelstrom.
No, it'll be Representative Maelstrom. All right, I'm going to close the work session on HCR 19. I'm going to open a public hearing on HCR 31.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, HCR 31 recognizes December 6, 2017, as centennial of Finnish independence.
Representative Boone, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm here before for the record. My name is Deborah Boone. I represent House District 32, the beautiful upper left coast and home to many, many Finns. So today I'm bringing before you a request that I received from the Finlandia Foundation, the Columbia Pacific chapter. And I know I'm going to butcher the names here because I'm Swedish, and so we don't know how to speak Spanish. Greg Jacob contacted us, and Pirjo Kujansu Schulback, and of this order in Portland, I think it is, but represents Oregon's Finnish population. And it honors and recognizes 100 years of Finnish independence. And they have chosen the day that they earned it, 100 years ago, December 6th, hard to believe. And they're going to have a celebration called Finland 100, and stay tuned for more information on that later, because I'll probably get an invitation to it, I hope, if they're listening. And I hope that you can, I'm not going to read the whole resolution, but it talks about the Finnish independence and the Finnish people. And I have quite a few Finnish people in my district, and my co-chief sponsor is Representative Johnson from Hood River, where they used to have a lot of Finns, and I think they still have a few left, and he's my partner in this. So I hope you can see fit to approve this today and make a lot of, well, thousands of Finnish people in Oregon very happy.
All right, thank you. Any questions for Representative Boone? Not, I will close the public hearing. I will open a work session on HCR 31.
Madam Chair, I move HCR 31 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair McLean moves HCR 31 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Motion carries.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. I'm going to close the work session and assign it to Representative Boone.
Madam Chair, I move the rules be suspended and that Representative Hack and Representative Barreto be allowed to vote on HCR 19. The public needs to know where they are on this.
Representative McLean moves the rules be suspended. Any objection? Representative Barreto.
I will be a yes on this. Marionberry pie is my favorite pie.
Representative Hack.
Well, it's not my favorite. It is one of them. So, yes.
He represents Marion County.
All right. Well, I said it's one of.
Oh.
Right.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. I'm going to open a public hearing on which one are they? HJM 12.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, HJM 12 urges President and Congress to recognize Matt Utterback as for receiving the National Superintendent of the Year Award.
Welcome, representatives.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Committee. I'm State Representative Jeff Reardon, District 48, Outer Southeast Portland, Clackamas County, which includes, and I'm proud to represent a lot of the kids and people that work at North Clackamas School District. I could give you the, you know, 5-minute version or the short one. I'll give you the short version. It's not very often that we get a nationally recognized school superintendent, and we just simply want to honor him with this measure, and I hope that you will support that.
Excellent. Thank you, Representative Meek.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Mark Meek, House District 40, Gladstone, Oregon City, Jennings Lodge. And I thank you for so much for listening to House Joint Memorial 12 in recognition of our North Clackamas School District Superintendent, Matt Utterback. I'm going to give you the 2-minute version. It's not 2 minutes. House Joint Memorial 12 urges the President and Congress to recognize Matt Utterback on receiving the National Superintendent of the Year Award. Matt Utterback has been an educator for over 3 decades and has served as superintendent of North Clackamas School District for the last 4 years. In his role, Matt is responsible for over 17,000 students in more than 30 schools. Matt's endeavors create a rich and engaging learning environment where students can thrive and educators have the tools and support they need to have a positive impact in the lives of our kids. Under his leadership, North Clackamas School District graduation rate rose from 69% to 83% between 2012 and 2016. And in recognition of his contributions to promote student success, Matt was named the 2016 Oregon Superintendent of the Year. Then in March of this year, the School Superintendents Association awarded Matt Utterback the 2017 AASA National Superintendent of the Year Award. I applaud Matt Utterback for his effective leadership and his contribution to Oregon's kids and our future. House Joint Memorial 12 recognizes the important role that effective leadership plays in promoting academic success, and I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Thank you both. I'm going to close the public hearing on HJM 12. And I'm going to open a work session on HJM 12.
Madam Chair, I move HJM 12 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair McLean moves the HJM 12 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Motion carries. Carries, Representative Reardon. I'll close the work session. I will open a public hearing on HCR 32.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, HCR 32 commends Western Oregon University's men's basketball team on 2015-16 season and reaching the NCAA Division II Elite Eight.
Welcome, Representative.
Chair Williamson, members of the committee, thank you very much for hearing this bill. Before I begin with comments about HCR 32, I couldn't help but hearing the last HJM, I believe, 12, which was about Matt Utterback, who actually attended Western Oregon, then State College. We were in student government together, so I just had to give a great shout out to that. We're everywhere with the Western Mafia. That's what we do. HCR 32 is something that last year, or actually a couple years ago, I could never have imagined that I'd be able to actually ask for. Western Oregon basketball has always been good, but last year they were exceptionally good. And in Monmouth, which is a small town, this activity, this effort, this team truly took on a meaning far beyond basketball. It brought the community together. It was an example of what Oregon students could do. For those of you unfamiliar, Western Oregon University is a NCAA Division II school. It's a relatively small school with a big heart. And we have a panel that will follow me to give some of the specifics. Mr. Tommy Love with the Advancement Department, the Athletic Director, Director Barbara Deering, and Coach Jim Shaw. But before they come up, I just want to hit the highlights. They went 33-4, which was the most conference wins in school history. Undefeated regular season with at the home anyway. But here's the important thing. 11 members of the team were from Oregon. So in Oregon, we have great sports traditions. We have the Oregon State Beavers. We have that team in Eugene. We have Portland.
Come on now.
Portland State.
Good man.
Portland State University.
Careful.
And a lot of them have, for reasons that make perfect sense, have a lot of out-of-state students there. And it's good, and we root for them. And yes, even though I can't be seen doing this at home, I root for the Ducks from time to time. But it was truly amazing to watch the athletes compete and have their families there because they live so close. It was truly amazing to watch this team that didn't necessarily have size on their side go up against teams that did, and time after time just out-heart them. It truly was an amazing thing. And sometimes concurrent resolutions are, you know, they have differing levels of value. But for Monmouth and for Western Oregon University and for this basketball team and for the fans, this resolution really will mean something. And I appreciate you considering it. I truly do. And I'm going to get off the stage and let the panel that can tell you the specifics come up and talk. Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Barbara Deering, Jim Shaw, Tommy Love. Hi, welcome. Go in whichever order you would like, but be sure to say your name for the record.
Chair Williamson, Vice Chairs McLean and Rayfield, and members of the committee. My name is Barbara Deering, and I am the Director of Athletics at Western Oregon University, a proud Wolves member. I appreciate the opportunity, you know, to speak to you today on HCR 32 resolution honoring Western Oregon University's 2016 men's basketball team and their noteworthy accomplishments, you know, that Representative Paul Evans mentioned to you. Your resolution provides well-deserved recognition to a team which brought national publicity to our state, the greater Salem community, the cities of Monmouth and Independence, and to Western Oregon University for their inspirational play and superb sportsmanship. As Oregon's only NCAA Division II public university, I want to draw attention to the many historical firsts this team provided for all of us to enjoy and which we can take pride. As mentioned in the resolution, the team finished with a 33-4 record, the best in Western Oregon University's history. They had 18 GNAC conference wins, which was the most in school history. They were undefeated at home as an NCAA Division II basketball team. They were ranked number one in the nation for 3 weeks in a row, the highest in school history. They finished the year ranked number three in the country, the highest in the school history. They finished the year ranked number one in the NCAA Division II West region, first time in school history. You know, we hosted the NCAA Division II West Regional Championship in the gymnasium on campus at Western Oregon University, first time in the school's NCAA history. We won that championship. First time in the school's history. We advanced to the Elite Eight, first time in school history. And not only did we advance, we made it as a semifinalist, first time in the school history. And by doing so, first time in, only basically the third time in Oregon history, where a team from Oregon has made it that far. Oregon in 1939, in Oregon State in 1963, and Oregon this past year. The two things that I think I'm most proud about with the historic firsts is that this team led the nation with the fewest turnovers per game. That's amazing in itself. But the one that really tops that is that in the Division II West Regional Championship game, this team established an NCAA first, a record which will never, ever be broken again. It can be tied, but it will never, ever be broken again. They had zero turnovers in that game. Can you imagine playing a basketball game and not giving your opponent anything that they can make any baskets off of? The last that I'll say here on this is there were honors for Coach Jim Shaw sitting to my left and your right. He was named the NABC Division II National Runner-Up Coach of the Year. Had we won the national championship, he would have been Coach of the Year, but he was the runner-up. He was the NABC West Region Coach of the Year. Yes, this was truly a season to remember for everyone, and the accomplishments of this team will be in the record books as historical firsts. Thank you for your acknowledgement of this team and their extraordinary accomplishments.
Hi, my name is Jim Shaw, and I'm the basketball coach at Western Oregon University. And I've always said, as Barb touched on history, that it's much easier to repeat history than it is to rewrite history. And so the fact this group rewrote history, in my opinion, is far more significant. And to give you a timeline, before last year, previously the two best teams in Western Oregon's history were two I played on, and that wasn't yesterday. So there were some things there that they knocked out of the way. Background is I had the opportunity to get an education and play basketball at Western Oregon, and it's helped me on a lifetime journey, which basketball is included. I've always told our guys that if you use basketball, it can be the best two-pound object you ever play with, but if you let it use you, it can be a pretty cruel mistress. And this group, I think, used basketball, as Barb said, in a lot of different ways. But I'm going to parallel it with my own journey. I've had an opportunity to coach at Oklahoma, at Washington, and I've been part of teams that at Oklahoma that went to the Final Four and won three Big 12 championships, and at Washington went to four Sweet 16s and won five Pac-12. But this group, it used its sum better than any of those groups. It significantly combined was better than its individual parts, and that's how a team should work. So to me, they really epitomized and defined what a team is. They gave away size virtually every night, height and weight, and if you took Andy out, it would have gave away a lot of size every night, and it still did height-wise, but he made up for our weight in a lot of ways. And if you asked how did they make up for their physical limitations, they did it in a couple ways, their intelligence and their heart, the combination of the two. The heart's been spoken on by others before me, including Mr. Evans, but the intelligence that the team played with, I mean, we call it leaving change on the table. They didn't leave any change on the table. And that ability to not beat themselves, I always told them if they can now carry that over into life where they maximize themselves, they learn how not to beat themselves, then this team and its season will not only have historical ramifications, but it'll have, more importantly, life lessons that they can carry every step of the way. As I mentioned, they didn't overwhelm you, and case in point is we went 21-1 in single-digit games. When you win 33 basketball games, there's usually a lot of blowouts. And this group, to go 21-1 in single-digit games, behind in the second half a dozen times, behind double digits on the road at Seattle Pacific, behind double digits at home versus Western Washington. And in our league, Western Washington, Alaska Anchorage, Seattle Pacific, and Central Washington had kind of been the four that had the market cornered in a lot of ways. And these guys pushed them all out of the way. I mean, they swept three of those schools for the first time ever. And the last historicals, they not only won the regular season conference, but conference tournament as well. There was only one trophy available in NCAA Division II basketball that this group didn't win, and that was the national championship. But in a sense, they were champions in every other way. And I think the more that they can be recognized, the better it is for any young student athlete, especially ones from the state of Oregon. So thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for your time today and your service to all of us as citizens of Oregon. My name is Tommy Love, and I am the Executive Director of Advancement in the Western Oregon University Foundation. As stated in the resolution to honor our 2015 and 16 Western Oregon men's basketball team, you've seen many honors listed in there that have been mentioned here today as well. While we are proud of these many awards, we are prouder of what these student athletes have done representing our campus and our greater community. I would like to highlight a few of these areas of importance. And first, as you've already heard, is this historic run and how it brought our community together truly. Not only were our games played before packed houses, especially during the West Regionals that we hosted, it also brought the establishments throughout our community as they welcomed thousands of visitors from all over the West Coast as they came to Monmouth and Independence and throughout the Willamette Valley to see our beautiful state. Additionally, Elite Eight viewing parties were not only held on campus, but we partnered actually with our local theater at Independence and actually used an entire theater to welcome fans to come watch the games as they were live streamed in, which doesn't happen very often. But we appreciate that partnership and what it does for our community. Secondly, is serving our community, not only as a team, but as part of our entire athletic department's efforts for community service. Our students make our communities, our campus, much safer and more beautiful. And I'll highlight that through two examples. One is Andy Ogvey. Mr. Everything won just about every possible individual award he could win. Two-time Conference Player of the Year, two-time West Region team member, and West Region Player of the Year. Andy, during the springs and summers, actually worked, and if you've ever been on our campus and you know how beautiful our campus is, Andy worked on the grounds crew, was edging sidewalks, was working in flower beds, was on the mower, was had the leaf blowers. Never an attitude or an ego to go with this, but again, an example of making our state and our campus beautiful. Also, two of our players worked during the summer months fighting forest fires. You don't hear that too often for student athletes, but their efforts to make our community safer and fighting fires throughout Oregon and the West Coast are great examples of not only making our campus beautiful, but our community safer as a whole. These two examples of these young athletes point out and illustrate the fact oftentimes people say they left their ego at the door, but the reality is, as members of this team, led by Coach Shaw, never had an ego to bring to the door. And I think this is something important to remember about the quality of our student athletes. And third, as we reflected in the university's commitment to our university, our coaches recruit the fields and the halls and the classrooms of the state of Oregon. As mentioned earlier by Representative Evans, a number of the players on that roster are from within our state boundaries. These student athletes represented Salem, Portland, Monmouth, Eugene, Corbett, Tillamook, Woodburn, Roseburg, Grants Pass, and Albany made up this historic run. As a university, Western Oregon is known for the percentage of students who come from within the state, but our graduates stay within Oregon. Approximately 80% of our graduates live within our borders, and the vast majority of those between Eugene and Portland. They are in our back door, and we are very proud of this because of what they bring. These students, as they graduate and go on, they become leaders in education, culture, nonprofit service, and helping to improve our entire economy. Western Oregon University invested in Oregonians because they are tremendous ambassadors to our campus and community. The investment in these young men who played on this basketball team are a testament to that. I actually urge you today and thank you for your time and your service, and ask for your unified support in this resolution to honor this basketball team because of their dedication, commitment, and teamwork as they represented our entire state to the nation. With that, go Wolves.
Thank you very much. Any questions? What an impressive record. Thank you for being here and sharing that story with us. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on HCR 32. I'll open a work session on HCR 32.
Madam Chair, I move HCR 32 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair McLean has moved HCR 32 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, motion passes. Representative Evans will be the carrier. I will close that work session. I will open a public hearing on HCR 33.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, HCR 33 encourages state officers, agencies, and employees to learn about impact of trauma and to implement evidence-based trauma-informed care practices and interventions. You have a -1 amendment. The -1 amendment adds additional detail regarding the impact of emotional neglect and exposure to traumatic events and that impact on children and adults, including how repeated exposure to traumatic events manifest in negative coping behaviors. You having no revenue, no fiscal impact on the -1.
Welcome, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. John Huffman, State Rep for House District 59. I want to thank you so much for giving me the opportunity about an hour ago to change my vote on the floor.
No problem.
Our schedules... required me to be down for a quorum, so that vote stands. But thank you for the try. Here today about House Concurrent Resolution 33. I'm excited. You guys are going to get the benefit to learn more about trauma-informed care and adverse childhood experiences. that you wouldn't have had the bill gone on the track it was going to before somebody rerouted it. So Representative Hack is the only committee member that has had the benefit of the informational hearing that Claire and Mandy gave about a month ago, something like that, in our childhood and family support committee hearing. It came into the session this year with some training that Claire provided to a lot of folks in the Gorge because of the work she does for trauma-informed care and ACEs, adverse childhood experiences. It was 2 or 3 days of training, and we had had a conference, multi-state conference in the Dalles last September, and I was able to be a part of that, so I've learned a lot about it. But this came about for me, first of all. Representative Buckley, as he was exiting the building, I said, "So, Peter, what are you going to be doing?" And he said, "Well, I'm going to be working in Southern Oregon with the ESD. I'm going to be working on trauma-informed care and ACEs," and he was going on and on and on about this, and he could see that I was kind of like blank look. He said, "Have you ever heard of that?" And I said, "No." And as circumstances allowed, with my job in healthcare last year, connected with the Gorge Health Council and the Gorge CCO, I was able to meet Claire and get involved in trauma-informed care and ACEs and try to expand that in the Gorge area. So I came into the session wanting to make sure that my colleagues had a better understanding of the principles of trauma-informed care and what ACEs are all about, because particularly in our social services safety net programs, we deal with so many folks that, whether young or old, are dealing with ACEs from their lives. And if we had a better understanding and better training within our agencies and the workers, caseworkers, we could get better outcomes. And so this is kind of a companion bill with House Bill 2401, which is Rep. Nathanson's and others, and I'm a signer on it. It's down in Ways and Means. And it recognizes the need for trauma-informed training for DHS child welfare personnel. It has a fiscal with it, so that's why it's down in Ways and Means. Janet Arns gave me this study that Oregon Alliance for Children's Programs did a study in 2014. Nearly 800 surveys of children and youth between the ages of 3 and 25 years of age that are within one of the child welfare systems that the state manages. 65% of the children and youth had 5 or more adverse childhood experiences. It's really glaring when you get the training and learn more about this, the need for that. And with that, I will be quiet so the experts can take over and share with you more about trauma-informed care and ACEs.
Great, thank you. Chair Williamson, Vice Chair McLean, and Rayfield Committee, thank you for the time today to speak. My name is Claire Rannett, I'm from Hunt River, Oregon, and I serve as the Project Director for the Mobilizing Action for Resilient Communities grant in the Columbia River Gorge. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House Continuing Resolution 33. The Mobilizing Action for Resilient Communities grant is managed by the Health Federation of Philadelphia and funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the California Endowment. It supports communities to become more just, healthy, and resilient by spreading the knowledge of adverse childhood experiences, the neurobiology of trauma, and trauma-informed care and resilience practices, providing people with knowledge and skills to empower them to be agents of change in their own lives, their families, and their communities. Trauma-informed care gives individuals, communities, power to create an intentional culture. The science calls us to recognize that past life experiences deeply affect how we interact with the world on a day-to-day basis. It shows us that it's not just delivering a service that's important, but how a service is delivered matters. It's not just what we educate children on, but how we educate them. It's not just what healthcare services we provide to adults, but also how we actually deliver those services. By creating trauma-informed environments, we can grow the positive impact that we have on the lives of individuals receiving these services daily. But it's not just for individuals that are receiving services. It's also for those that deliver services. Taking care of service providers is key to supporting well-being in communities. How staff are treated in organizations matters. and influences the services that are provided. It influences individual outcomes. It's difficult for a clinician to deliver the best care when they struggle daily with burnout. House Continuing Resolution 33 provides support to communities and organizations working to become trauma-informed. It calls us to collaborate and work towards a goal that cannot be achieved alone. Thank you for your time in considering House Continuing Resolution 33.
So thank you, Chair Williamson and committee. Forgive my voice, I just came from a training on trauma-informed care. So I'm Mandy Davis, Dr. Mandy Davis. I'm the director of Trauma-Informed Oregon, which is housed at Portland State University School of Social Work. So thank you for letting me say a few words in support of HCR 33. Trauma-Informed Oregon is primarily funded by the Oregon Health Authority. And we are, again, at the School of Social Work. Our job is actually to go around the state and help systems organizations become trauma-informed, so to learn about ACEs and to change how we kind of do systems and organizational change in order to support creating welcoming environments so folks can actually engage in service delivery. So a quick thing, when we talk about trauma-informed care, what we mean is that we're going to use knowledge about neurobiology, epigenetics, adverse childhood experience, and resiliency to provide more effective service. So that's kind of what we mean by it, and that's what we're kind of out there trying to help folks do. So when we talk about trauma-informed care, we talk about anything from the skills that bus drivers in schools need to know to what our buildings look like, to the questions we ask folks, as well as what Claire talked about, most importantly and critical component is our workforce wellness and increasing our retention rates in our workforce in order to do the complex work that's necessary with the families in kind of the situations that they're finding themselves in Oregon. Trauma-informed Oregon, it's also important to say when we talk about trauma, we're talking about adverse childhood experiences, so we're talking about abuse and neglect and poverty. We're also talking about houselessness, and we're also talking about targeted violence and oppression. So we're really kind of expanding our scope of what we think about trauma, especially around things around poverty, because of the research coming out about that now. So Trauma-Informed Oregon happens to have been in 20 counties already in the state of Oregon. We've trained about 5,000 folks in the past couple years. And what I really want you all to know is in doing that work, there's a ton of work going around the state of Oregon. And so lots of different communities and organizations are doing some pretty innovative practice around in early childhood, in housing, in library work, and in community mental health. And the kind of innovation where we're headed is really what some of the work Claire's been doing is around community resilience, so how to develop resilient communities and kind of support collaborations across those systems. So HCR provides the support, 33 provides that support to work with these programs, really supporting the collaboration between programs and organizations that historically haven't necessarily been able to work together as effectively, but also across communities across Oregon. So that's the kind of fun thing I get to do. HCR 33 is also a similar resolution, have been passed in Utah, California, Alaska, Minnesota, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. I think you want to know that Oregon is a state that's at the forefront of this work around trauma-informed care from a state perspective. We're doing some of the kind of most innovative work around. We have a state policy around trauma-informed care and OHA, and those type of things are happening. So thank you for considering HCR 33. I think it's a huge message of support to the work that's going out there across the state.
Thank you. So, Madam Chair, what HCR 33 does is recognizes the importance of trauma-informed care and adverse childhood experiences in the delivery of services and the relationships that we have at the state level to the citizens. And it encourages leaders, agencies to pursue in a more meaningful way than is even going on now. And there is some good work being done through DHS. And like I said, Representative Nathanson recognized this with House Bill 2401, the benefit from trauma-informed care training and training in ACEs. And so it just encourages that kind of work to be prioritized within the state. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Representative Hack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say thank you. Thank you, Representative Huffman, for bringing this, and thank you for the work that you've done, the connection between the trauma-informed care and the work that we've done with ACEs is huge, and so I just wanted to say thank you for that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Doug Riggs, come on down.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, through record, Doug Riggs. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Alliance for Children's Programs, and we were meeting with Representative Huffman earlier today, and we're talking about the crisis in child welfare, and it really is. We're in free fall right now with the therapeutic residential system. So he asked us to come by and chat, and I wanted to do that. Let me give you just a little bit of background. We started working on ACEs about 5 or 6 years ago, and we combined a variety of groups, including CCOs, school-based health centers, the Alliance of Children's Programs, and many other groups, and we held a series of 4 or 5 conferences in a variety of places around the state. And it became very obvious that ACEs was a significant issue that we had to focus on. And if you look in OLIS, you'll see a 2-page document that the Alliance has put together that talks about ACEs, and Representative Huffman referred to it. And really what we're talking about is kids who come out of very traumatic situations as youth. And we were at Liberty House just a couple days ago, and the amount of child abuse that takes place in this state is shocking. It's very disheartening. But fortunately, we have 21 centers around the state that are trying to respond to that. The outcome of all of that abuse and difficult situations is measured in that ACEs study, and there are 10 different factors that can be incorporated into it. So any one of us probably sitting here has 1 or 2 or 3 ACEs, and everybody has an adverse childhood experience at some point. The average for kids in the state of Oregon is about 4. As Representative Huff mentioned, the average of kids in the care of the programs, the nonprofits that I represent, is about 6.1. And in therapeutic foster care, which is a system in free fall right now, it averages 8 out of 10. So these are kids who have very significant challenges. You know, the exciting thing about this is that there's resilience among youth. So our best opportunity to kind of intercept those adverse childhood experiences and get kids back on track is when they're youth. And that's really what we focus an awful lot on. I did want to share with you why this bill and why House Bill 2401, which is in Ways and Means, is so important. About a year ago, there was a suicide in one of our programs in Corvallis. It was a program for kids who had attempted suicide multiple times. And the program in Corvallis has one of the very lowest rates of suicide of any youth program any place in the country. They are a national leader in this, but unfortunately an incident occurred. The response to that indicates why this bill is so important. At the time, DHS was overburdened with investigations, and so what they did is they contracted out with investigators from the Department of Administrative Services, and they brought financial auditors in to do an investigation of this very high-end Level 5 therapeutic residential system. And one of the things that those investigators said is, we've had this suicide, there are 11 other kids in this program. We insist that you go and do a suicide evaluation of all the other 10 kids left in the program. The professionals in that program said, no, that's the wrong thing to do at this point in time. That will heighten the level of consideration and interest in suicides. The last thing you want to do at this point in time is further traumatize those kids by sitting them down in a room and spending an hour and a half asking them about suicide, their thoughts about suicide, whether or not they've tried suicide in the past, et cetera. So the professionals and the therapists who were trauma-informed said don't do that. State insisted that they do that. In the next period of time, I don't know if it was 2 weeks or a month, 3 more attempted suicides in that program. And we've spent several months trying to recover from that situation. Had those investigators been trauma-informed and gone through the education, they would have understood you don't want to do that. That's not a trauma-informed practice. So bills like this, bills like Nancy Nathanson's bill that's in Ways and Means, are so absolutely critical. You know, we're talking about kids who are, I think, the most vulnerable adolescents in our state. And these types of bills, I think, are absolutely essential. So I just want to add my 2 cents in support of this bill, in support of House Bill 2401, and thank you for your consideration today.
Thank you. Any questions? All right, thank you very much. I'm going to close the public hearing on HCR 33. I'm going to open a work session on HCR 33.
Madam Chair, I move the dash one amendment to HCR 33.
Vice Chair McLean has moved the dash one amendment to HCR 33. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Motion passes.
Madam Chair, I move HCR 33 as amended to the floor with a B adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair McLean has moved HCR 33 as amended to the floor with a B adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, motion passes. Carrier will be Representative Huffman. Close that work session. I will open a work session on HCR 36. Public hearing.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, HCR 36 recognizes and honors Lance Corporal Ty Lewis Hart for his service to the country.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, State Representative Jody Hack, representing South Salem, Almsville, and Turner. This is an honor, but a difficult one. Lance Corporal Ty Hart, and you're going to hear from his mom, Trina, and his dear wife, Hannah, today. I've known Ty pretty much his whole life. He grew up just down the road from our house, and remember him running around in his little rubber boots and his shorts. He and my son were dear friends, and my daughter, and we've known their family for many, many, many years. And it was my son's first sleepover. It's at their house. So while I am absolutely honored to be able to have the opportunity to bring this memorial before you, it is also with an extremely heavy heart and not something I ever thought I would do. On January 14th of 2016, Lance Corporal Ty Hart was one of 12 who were involved in the collision of the helicopters that were flying over in Hawaii. I'm sure you saw it on the news. And on January 20th, he was declared deceased. I want to give his family the opportunity to talk about what a wonderful young man he was, but he was so kind, and was always such a ray of sunshine to everyone. And even when people were not as nice to him as they could have been, he always met him with a smile. And as I think back on Ty and I think about him in his little rubber boots and his shorts running around my yard, I then think of him as the young man in a big strap and football uniform. And then the last time I saw him was when he married his sweet wife, Hannah, in his Marine uniform, serving his country. And they're just a wonderful family, and they have been an inspiration to so many people, having gone through what they have. And Ty's family, and who Ty was and still is to so many people, is a true testament to the people who raised him. And it's an honor to be able to honor Ty this way and your family. And with that, I'd like to give them an opportunity to speak about Ty.
Oh, wow. Oh, jeez.
Thank you all so much for having us here today. The picture I placed in front of you is the day Jody referred to.
You put your name on the record.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
My name is Trina Hart, and I am Ty's mom. To my left is my daughter-in-law, Hannah Hart, Ty's wife. So the picture I placed, I wanted you guys to see him, the perfect Marine and the perfect son. He had a wonderful life. And some days when we hear things about Ty, we smile and we laugh because he lived life. We lost our son when he was 21 years old, and no parent expects that. I had the opportunity to speak with the Marine that taxied Ty out that night. For some reason, I needed to talk to the last person that saw him. And I said, "How was he?" And he said, big old grin on his face, double thumbs up, happy to fly. And all Ty wanted to be, since he was in the eighth grade, was a United States Marine. And he was very loud about it, and he was very clear about it. I remember when he told us that in eighth grade. Okay. Junior year, he began the delayed entry program, and he never looked back, not once. He asked our permission if he could go into the Marine Corps. And of course, we said yes. We've been questioned several times since the accident. Would we change our answer? And the answer is absolutely not. I would still give him my blessing. Would he have changed going in if we'd have said no? Probably. Ty had a love of family and a love of community and a love of his country that was just amazing. I can honestly tell you I never heard a curse word out of his mouth until he came home from boot camp. Never one time did he backtalk me. Never swore in front of me, which is rare. We raised three teenage boys and never heard curse words or disrespect. So I knew that Ty was going to go on and he was going to be a great Marine. I also knew in the back of my head something he was going to do was going to make an impact bigger than anything we imagined. On the morning of January 15th, everything in our life changed with a simple knock on the door. And it's exactly like you see on TV. In my office stood three perfectly uniformed Marines. But they weren't there to give us the worst news. They were there to tell us that there had been a midair collision over the coast of Oahu at 10:34 p.m., they were there to tell us that Ty was involved, and they were there to tell us that he was classified as duty status unknown. That gave us hope. I have to say that one of the blessings that our family has received out of this is most people get the knock on the door, and it's the worst news. And I can't imagine, but it has to be like being blown over. We were flown to Hawaii to be with our daughter-in-law immediately. We were there within 24 hours. And we had 6 hours in flight to just pray and stare out the window. And we were sure when we hit the ground in Honolulu, the Marines were going to meet us with good news. But they didn't. We spent 120 hours sequestered in our son's home, while some of the most selfless, amazing men in the world searched for those 12 Marines. United States Marine Corps, the Navy, Honolulu Fire, police, hundreds of people. Every night they brought us into a chapel of about maybe a little bigger than this room to tell us, never good news, but to tell us what they had done that day. The agony and the pain, but yet the honor that we could see on these men's faces drove home to us what honor meant. They battled 30 and 40 foot seas. The anchors were ripped out of the boat several times. Men were injured. The helicopters were in 350 to 400 feet of water. So if you know anything about diving, they couldn't send divers down. On the fifth day at sunset, we sat on the beach in Hawaii and they called off the search.
It was then that we knew that he wasn't going to come home. And that's a moment unlike any other. But again, when you're part of the United States Marine Corps and you're the mother or the father or the wife, there is an honor that goes with it that's unlike anything I can put into words for you. On the sixth day, once again, three uniformed Marines, perfectly dressed, appeared in our living room at Hannah and Ty's house to officially declare Ty deceased. Nothing prepares your family, nothing. And nothing prepares you for the sense of honor that you are going to feel. We brought Ty home in April. It took almost 4 months. He was brought home and laid to rest on our farm out in Almsville to the most beautiful homecoming you can imagine. The state of Oregon laid it out. From the minute we left Portland Airport to the minute we drove into our driveway, every overpass, fire, police rescue, people with flags, people with signs, was incredible. When we reached Staten, where he grew up, it was breathtaking. And Hannah looked at me and said, "He deserves this." And I just looked at her and I smiled. We were smiling through our tears, but I said, "Yes, yeah, he does. They all do." There were flags, there were signs, candles for miles. And the one thing I will never forget about the night Ty got home and came through Staten was the beautiful silence. The level of honor standing along those streets just was amazing. No one was sitting, no one was talking, but people were just standing and watching Ty come home. It was amazing. We've thrown our family into honoring our son, our hometown hero, Hannah's husband, through a scholarship foundation. Every penny that we've been given has gone into a foundation where we utilize the money to pay for student athletes that maybe their family cannot afford the fees or the equipment. To date, we've scholarshiped about 40 children. We've raised over $50,000. And it's really neat because Ty was a giver. When he grew out of his cleats, he donated, and when he grew out of his gi for martial arts, he donated it. So what better way to honor him? This resolution passing and a roadside sign leading out somewhere where his friends and his family and everyone will see is just a beautiful honor to know that every day people will see his name and they will know that he gave his life for all of us. There were 12 beautiful men that died that day. We've met all of their families. We've spoke to all their mothers, wives, children, some doing better than others, but everyone embracing honor. I'll leave you with this, and that is never forget that we're all free. We're all sitting right here today because of heroes we don't see. Our son was on a training mission flying over Hawaii, married 6 months to his high school sweetheart, living the perfect life. But they all 12 gave their lives for us. Our families forever changed. We forever hurt. However, we do understand the meaning of honor. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you. You're okay.
I'm the talker in the family.
Well, I just want to say thank you for coming and sharing Ty with us, and I am so sorry for your family's loss.
Thank you.
Held it together for a while. All right, I will close the public hearing on HCR 36. I will open a work session on HCR 36.
Madam Chair and Mrs. Hart and Hannah, thank you for being here today. And I can just tell you that we will remember. We honored the service of Ty and all the Marines we lost that day. And not everyone can be a Marine, but a lot of us went to boot camps, and so we have a sense of the type of commitment he made. And thank you from the bottom of my heart. And it is my honor to ask you, Madam Chair, that I move House Concurrent Resolution 36 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair McLean has moved HCR 36 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Representative Holvey.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank you for your sacrifice. And truly don't know how to put into words my feelings, as I have a son who's still in the military, joined up with some of his buddies after 9/11, and is still in the Army. He's done several tours, and every time he goes on a tour, we have this fear, and I just can't imagine the pain, but happy that you feel this honor, because he surely deserves it. And thank you for your courage, your strength, and the sacrifice you've given all of us.
Are there any objections? Seeing none, motion passes. Representative Hack, you'll be the carrier. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, I will close the work session on HCR 36. I will open a public hearing on HCR 16.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, HCR 16 designates rescue shelter dogs as official state dog.
Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to take a respectful moment before we change the subject. Chair Williamson, members of the committee, for your record, I'm David Gomberg from House District 10 on the Central Oregon coast. Very pleased to be with you today to discuss HCR 16, which was requested by the Oregon Humane Society and which would name the rescue shelter dog as the Oregon State Dog. Madam Chair, when I first came to the Capitol, I received a warning. They said, if you want to get into trouble, introduce legislation dealing with dogs or introduce legislation naming a state anything. And here I am doing both. I want to assure you that this bill is not just symbolic, it's not frivolous, it has a clear and determined goal and purpose, and that is to recognize rescue shelter dogs and by implication to encourage their adoption. So Madam Chair, in Oregon each year about 18,000 dogs are adopted out, 18,000. I'm not going to talk to the committee today about how those adoptions changed the lives of those dogs and give them a second chance. I think that speaks for itself. I'm not going to talk about how those 18,000 adoptions changed the lives of the adoptees, whether it's a service animal or a comfort animal or just simply another member of the family. There are changes that take place there as well. And I think that speaks for itself. What I'd like to talk to you about is something a little bit different, and that is the cost of maintaining those 18,000 animals in public and private shelters throughout Oregon. And when I say the cost, I'm talking about the cost of housing, I'm talking about the cost of feeding, I'm talking about the cost of health care, and in some fortunately unusual circumstances, it's the cost of euthanizing animals, either because of their health or because of overcrowding and the inability to make adoptions. And I wanted to give you two examples of that. One of those two examples is from my own home county in Lincoln County, where the shelter is operated as a public entity as part of the Sheriff's Department. Our Lincoln County shelter has 8 employees, and the director there tells me that the average cost to take care of one of the animals that they offer for adoption is about $500. $500 to take care of that animal and prepare it for adoption and to maintain it until it is adopted. And their annual budget, public dollars, $500,000. $500,000 are spent in addition to other funds that are collected by support organizations and nonprofits that 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 help with the efforts of our local Lincoln County shelter. At the other end of the spectrum is the Oregon Humane Society, who requested this bill. They have 80 full-time employees. They have about 2,300 regular volunteers that work with them, and their operating cost to support their inventory is about $40,000 a day. That means that their operating cost is about $15 million a year, and these are not public dollars, but dollars that are raised by Oregonians to support rescue animals that are seeking adoption. Now, there have been bills that have been floating around the Capitol to name one breed or another as the state dog, and I appreciate and respect those efforts. There's one over in the Senate right now that would name the Border Collie as the Oregon state dog. I would urge you to approach with caution the notion of naming one particular breed, and I say that because if you name the Border Collie as the state dog, well, then all the other dogs lose. The Newfoundland loses. The Newfoundland was proposed last year. There's a couple of wonderful Newfoundlands here in the room today, and if they were named the state dog, then maybe the Chihuahua or the German Shepherd or the Jack Russell would also lose. So I'm suggesting to you an approach that names virtually every kind of dog, and most of the dogs in Oregon, as our state dogs, and I assure you that our shelters are full of full-breed dogs of any kind. And I say that to you because my wife Susan and I are the proud parents of two purebred Samoyeds. I've got nothing against breeders. I've got nothing against breeds. We have nurtured seven of them now, and our latest Juno is a young rambunctious character, and you can't leave any food anywhere unattended and turn your back, or it mysteriously disappears. And our older Sammy came to us from a rescue named after a card game. Our older Sammy is named Trump. And the neighbors wonder sometimes when we step out in the yard to start calling for him or chastising him. But that brings me to my final point, Madam Chair, and that is that that all the breeds and breeders in Oregon that I'm aware of operate focused rescue operations for their own breed. And so the breeders are not left out of this measure that I'm bringing for before you. They are purposely included in it because you can rescue a shelter dog from the Humane Society or from your county shelter, and you can also rescue it from the breeder organizations that take very good care of those animals as well. So it's an all-encompassing bill. The final thing I'll leave you with is this, and I have been asked from time to time, as I'm sure you have, is don't we have more important things to do than name a state dog? Well, of course we do. I mean, we're trying to balance the budget. We're trying to fix our roads and fix our schools and deal with our economy, and those are all important things. And I would suggest to you, too, that another important thing that we do here is to celebrate our Oregon culture. And we celebrate our Oregon culture with all kinds of things. Sometimes it's naming a state pie, and sometimes it's celebrating a brave Oregonian. And I would suggest to you that in this case, naming a shelter dog is somewhere between the two. So I hope that you'll consider this measure. I hope that you'll listen to some of the people that have come here to testify about it. Again, I say to you that it's a bill that takes in all kinds of breeds, all kinds of dogs, gives them all a second chance, and saves a lot of money. Saves a lot of money, Madam Chair, and I hope that you'll schedule a work session in the near future and give us an opportunity to take this to the floor. Be happy to answer any questions for you.
Questions, Representative Gomberg. All right, thank you very much. Helen Raptis, Lindsay Ford, and John Hopkinson. Welcome. Go in any order you'd like, but please remember to say your name for the record.
Madam Chair, my name is Helen Raptis. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Humane Society, and today I'm speaking in support of House Concurrent Resolution Number 16 to name the shelter dog as a state dog. I'm also the host of AM Northwest on KATU-TV, and I truly believe that shelter dogs represent the Oregon spirit. Just like Oregonians, shelter dogs come from all different backgrounds, all shapes, all sizes, all colors. They love the outdoors, rain or shine. They like to socialize. They're caring. They're loving. And they don't mind how you look in the morning. Shelter dogs who are adopted aren't just saved by the human. The human can be saved by the dog. I'm sure you've heard many of the news stories about a dog owner who's alerted to a fire in his home by his rescue dog, or a dog shelter dog that's been retrained to find somebody in the wilderness. Recently, a friend of mine was in the ICU, and thankfully he had a wonderful surgeon who let him see his rescued lab, and that was the only thing that made him feel even a bit more positive. He'd almost died twice, but a surgeon let him see his dog who he had rescued. And I did a feature story a while back at McLaren Youth Facility. It's in Woodburn. They have this incredible program there called Project Pooch. It's where they pair unadoptable dogs with inmates. And these inmates so fall in love with these dogs. And here's the deal. They feel like they're unadoptable. They feel like they're throwaway. But these dogs change their lives. The inmates have told me that they've learned not just about responsibility and patience. They learn about empathy. They learn about selflessness. And the other thing that they get is that for the first time, for many of them, they get unconditional love. And that's what these shelter dogs do. An elderly neighbor of mine in Northeast Portland was severely depressed. Her family finally adopted a shelter dog for her. And for the first time, we saw her actually go outside in the morning and walk her dog, because she finally felt like she had something to live for. That's how much they can change our lives. For my husband and myself, we've been married 25 years, and during the 25 years, all of our dogs have been from shelters. Because dog people do this, we like to show you our dogs. So the two we have now, Callie and Sophie, both from the Oregon Humane Society, and we just cannot imagine our lives without them. Callie was rescued by the Humane Society from a puppy mill. She had been starved and kept in a cage for 3 years. She had scars on her nose. She had almost no hair on her stomach. She had no hair on her tail. When we took her for walks initially, people couldn't recognize what kind of dog she was. But she has become the most incredible lover. She is affectionate to everyone, to us. We take them for walks, and they teach all the kids that we run into, we let them pet the dogs, about love. And so my point being, there is just nothing like the love of a rescue dog. You save them, but yeah, they save you. I mentioned one, on a personal note, last year my co-host Dave Anderson passed away from pancreatic cancer. And I love my husband, don't get me wrong, but our two dogs saved me, because it was with them that I could cry and cuddle and feel that connection and know it's okay. Because they know, your dogs know when you're not feeling good, and they want to make you feel better. So again, I just want to reiterate that just like so many Oregonians, shelter dogs, I believe, are like that. We've gone through our hardships, we struggle with just a little bit of help, and oftentimes we come out on the other side with a very loving attitude toward others. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Lindsay Ford. I'm here as a board member on behalf of the Oregon Humane Society. And just to give you guys a brief background on what we do, one of the many things we do, we are not affiliated with any other Oregon Humane Society across the U.S. or locally. We also do not take any tax dollars. And we are coming up on about our 150-year anniversary of helping animals in our community. And just to give some numbers to you guys, I know we talked about 18,000 overall animals are adopted every year. Over the past few years, the Oregon Humane Society alone has adopted approximately 10,000 animals per year. So it's a pretty big number. So I'm here supporting HCR 16. And the reason why I joined the board, I, of course, have two family members as well that are adopted. And they just bring so much joy and love into our lives that I think it's only natural that we should give back and support and help them and protect them as much as we can. So in the spirit of Oregon and how the state was founded, I think that, you know, many people that came to found Oregon came from very diverse backgrounds. They had to persevere, and they eventually became great members of their own communities and thrived locally. And I think, much like the pioneers that came before us, shelter dogs are very similar. They have to overcome many obstacles when finding their way to meet their new loving family in Oregon. And I think shelter dogs give companionship and love with everybody that they meet, regardless of their breed or their past history. So I ask you guys, on behalf of the board and everyone at Oregon Humane Society, to please support HCR 16. Thank you.
Chair Williamson and members of the committee, thank you for having me today. My name is John Hopkinson. I work for the Investigations Department of the Oregon Humane Society, which is not affiliated with any local or national organization, and we're not funded by any tax dollars. And I just wanted to briefly share why I think that sheltered, why I support HCR 16 and why I think shelter rescue dogs are an not only accurate representation of Oregonians, but a positive image of who we are as a state. And the three main reasons is that they're, like what's been stated before, they're resilient. You know, I've been with investigations for 2 years, and I've seen the worst abuse and neglect in cases in this state. And I'm constantly amazed by their ability to overcome obstacles and adversity and just provide unconditional love to their families and just trust again. And I think that's reflective of us as a people and as a state. They're also diverse. They're all shapes and sizes. I foster a lot of protective custody dogs, and I've had Chihuahua Pomeranian puppies that really thrived in my 400 square foot studio apartment in Portland. You know, they're basically little shadows. And I've also had old collies that are truly barn dogs that, you know, are less of shadows, more like roommates that, you know, barely acknowledge you in the common areas of your apartment. You know, I think that that's reflective of Oregonians too. We have, you know, people in the city, people in the farm. We're a diverse group. Lastly, like what's been said before, there's 18,000 shelter animals adopted in Oregon every year. I see people come in from all corners of the state to adopt dogs. So the last thing I want to state is that I know there's a large amount of submitted written materials for this resolution, but there's one from a representative from Georgia who submitted a very similar piece of legislation and introduced it there, and that was 2 years ago, and he's seen $2 million of taxpayer money being saved over those past 2 years. So like Representative Gomberg said, this is a, you know, it is a symbolic piece of legislation, but also can make a difference in the lives of homeless pets as well as save our state a lot of money. So thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? All right. Thank you all very much. Bobby Wagner, Deborah Wood, Dean Freeze.
We need a guide dog.
Any order you'd like, just remember to say your name for the record.
Yes, Chair Williamson and committee. I'm a volunteer at Oregon Humane Society, long term. My name is Bobby Wagoner. I, number one, retired, and my present was a shelter dog to myself. I knew very few people in my neighborhood. I now know everybody. There is one little girl who, she learned to walk at 10 months old because her thing from the time she could crawl was she would see Lenny. And she wanted to walk him. 10 months old was the first time she took his leash and walked him. By the time she was 12 months old, she could walk Lenny a half a mile. I have photos of her taking of her reading books to Lenny. He is her best friend. He exudes this energy to everybody throughout the community. He is an ambassador for the Oregon Humane Society. He goes out and does outreaches. We have pictures of him here in the mall in Salem. But also in walking in our neighborhood, you start talking with people. And in our neighborhood, I would guess that there is no specific breed where you could say 3%, 4%, 5% maybe. But if you wanted to say what percentage of shelter dogs, I am going to guess we have 65% to 80% of the dogs walk in my neighborhood are shelter dogs. So it's more encompassing, I think, than having a specific breed. Now I'm crying after talking about my little dog. But, so anyway, that I that is the big reason for doing that, or thinking that would be a good option.
Madam Chairperson, members of the committee, I'm Deborah Wood. I'm a manager of animal services for Washington County and the Bonnie Hayes Animal Shelter. And just a couple of thoughts to give you. I just see this as a great celebration today of what makes Oregonians very special. Something you may not know is the Portland metropolitan area is certainly one of, and perhaps the safest place in America to be a homeless pet. Our rate of euthanasia in our shelters is basically the only animals that are being euthanized are those that not only are unadoptable when they come in, but could not be made adoptable through veterinary care, through animal behavior intervention. I mean, it's really a testimony to our communities, both those of us who are county shelters and to the nonprofit partners that we work so closely with. And as many of you may know, there's a large number of nonprofits, Oregon Humane Society and others, that bring up animals that would be that are on the list to be euthanized in other states and come up here where they're going to find plenty of loving homes. And we all work together. So, you know, we know in Washington County we can turn to our partners in the nonprofit sector and get help for the animals that don't work so well in a public shelter like ours, and we all work collaboratively. But what I really see this in is obviously every dog is great. You don't do what we all do for a living, and you don't do what we all do in our personal lives if you don't think every dog is great. But what I see this is a celebration of the people of the state of Oregon. We obviously have a much higher percentage of people adopting rescue dogs of all types than they have in other states, or else other states would be solving their own problems in the same way that we solve ours. So I think there's a great opportunity to have this be a celebration and time to say thank you to the people of the state of Oregon and to keep on encouraging that behavior that saves lives and makes our shelters a place that people can come to and feel happy about and proud of and be a part of the community that makes so much difference.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dean Fries. I'm the manager and director of the Marion County Dog Services. I support HR C-16, and as the director of a county shelter, I have a similar perspective that Deborah has. But do you know that there are 339 breeds of dogs? 340 if you count the mutt. And yet, all of these dogs are near and dear to people's hearts. I bring that up because at a county shelter, which is very much tax dependent, unlike our partners at Oregon Humane, we are at the mercy of the taxpayers. And every county shelter is differently funded, but I can speak to Marion County. Our budgeting is such that the taxpayers encompass about 61% of our budget. So we don't make money. And that's an important thing to consider when looking at which breed, or even if this is something that you'd like to support. But we hope you do support this bill. Dogs come in all shapes and sizes and breeds, and they represent all of us. So at the county level, because we are funded mostly by taxes, it's a tremendously costly endeavor, as you've already heard a little bit. I'll share one other specific example of a financial aspect of what it costs a shelter, a typical shelter, to house a dog and so forth. We had one dog just this month, who stayed with us a month because he was not a puppy. He wasn't cute. He was a pit bull. Pit bulls are very difficult to place, and they have a bad reputation. We worked with all of our partners, tried so hard to adopt this dog. We finally did, and the cost was $1,174.39. I bring up this example not because it's unique, but because there was nothing extra that we had to do for this dog. There were no medical costs. They didn't need its teeth to be, it had to be examined by a vet, but really it was just boarding, and so it's a tremendous cost. So anything that would bring the agenda forward to just bring awareness to people about shelter dogs would be incredibly helpful. So I would urge you to consider that every breed of dog is wonderful when you own it. And so if adoption is something that would help in bringing this awareness to the people of Oregon, then I think that we could all agree that that would be a very positive step. Thank you very much for your time.
All right, thank you very much. Brian Potswitz, Emma Asap Ellis, and Scott Beckstead.
Good afternoon, Chair Williamson, members of the committee. My name is Brian Posowitz. I'm here today on behalf of an organization called Humane Oregon. We're a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization formed in 2014 to help advocate for animal welfare in Oregon's political process and elections. And we have board members from a number of different parts of Oregon's animal welfare community. We also support HCR 16, so I wanted to come down here and say a few brief words to support it. This would be more than just a trivial symbolic gesture, because it would help promote the adoption of dogs from the state's animal rescues and shelters. That would be good for at least two reasons. Number one, it obviously would be good for the dogs involved, because they would find homes instead of being stuck in crowded shelters or possibly euthanized. Number two, as Representative Gomberg has pointed out, by promoting adoption of rescue shelter dogs, we could also be saving government money by reducing the number of dogs that government-funded animal control facilities need to take care of. I went through all the testimonies submitted on OLIS. I think there's about 75 submissions. I wanted to make a couple of quick comments on those. Number one, I think about 90% of them are enthusiastically supportive, and that should be some measure of public support for this resolution. Number two, there are some really heartwarming stories and pictures in there, and I think it would be great to honor some of that spirit and some of those experiences with this resolution. Number three, I also wanted to call your attention, as Mr. Hopkinson had, to the written testimony from Joe Wilkinson, who is a former Republican state representative from Georgia and provides, I think, a really persuasive case. He sponsored and got passed a similar resolution in Georgia, and I think makes a good case for why it was meaningful and how it's been beneficial, and I would encourage you all to take a look at that. I realize that when you're naming a state something or other, maybe there's you want to try to be unique. I think there are also cases in public policy where you want to follow the good example of another state, and I think this would be just such a case. So thank you very much.
Chair Williamson and members of the committee, my name is Emma Alsept Ellis, and I was invited with Humane Oregon, but I started my own organization that teaches youth about animals, proper care, and also we fundraised $17,000 for the Oregon Humane Society. And recently I was approached by a woman and her son who has autism, and they wanted to get a trained dog to help him because he wanted to start doing performing arts. And they were really worried because they had heard a lot about shelter dogs not being able to be trained and not being really well-behaved enough to do something like that. And he was able to go into the Oregon Humane Society and find his dog, Sina, which is now his best friend. And he actually was able to perform a speech entirely by himself on stage, which is something he couldn't even walk into a room 1 year prior. So I just really wanted to speak to the stigma that people have before they're able to meet shelter dogs. And I think that if we named the shelter dog the state dog, that that would really help people who aren't aware of that and really bring great awareness to that. So thank you for your consideration.
Chair Williamson, co-chairs and members of the committee, for the record, Scott Beckstead, Senior Oregon Director and Rural Outreach Director for the Humane Society of the United States. I'm also live with a rescued shelter dog named Atticus, who is featured prominently on my Facebook page. Over the years, we've probably had more shelter rescue dogs in our home than we can count. When my wife was the animal control officer for the Lincoln County Sheriff's Office, she was always bringing home a rescued shelter dog who needed to be fostered. So I can speak from personal experience on this as well. I would also reference the overwhelming support in the record for this bill. Oregon loves dogs, and we have in recent years made great strides toward establishing our state as a real leader in protecting dogs. Representative Holvey back in 2009 sponsored a bill to establish one of the toughest puppy mill laws in the nation. In 2013, Representative Witt sponsored a bill to restrict the tethering of dogs. And we all know that Portland is probably the top dog-loving city in the whole country. So this bill really, I think, perpetuates that history and establishes Oregon as a place that really does cherish the bond that we have with man's best friend. So we hope that you'll understand and acknowledge that HCR 16 is not just a symbolic or feel-good measure, but actually good public policy by promoting the adoption of homeless dogs. So with that, I'll conclude my remarks. I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Susan Resnick, I'm sorry, I'm going to slaughter your last name.
It's Resnick.
Thank you. <It's> like...
Wow. There's some big dogs.
Madam Chairman and members of the committee, I am Susan Resnick. Thank you for letting me come today. My family has a kennel of Newfoundland dogs, service therapy dogs. But I believe the Newfoundland would make a great state dog of Oregon because it plays a valuable role in the history of our state. Lewis and Clark came to the Pacific Northwest with a Newfoundland dog named Seaman. Seaman was chosen for his strength, his loyalty, and his ability to do water rescue. It did not take long for the crew to attach themselves to Seaman, and everyone called him our dog. Lewis and Clark are remembered for their journey west, but their dog Seaman is also recognized and has many statues.
We have to go on the other side of this. Yeah, thank you.
Has many statues in our nation, including Illinois, Missouri, Nebraska, Iowa, North Dakota, and Montana. In Oregon, there are statues of Seaman at Cascade Locks, St. Helens, and Fort Clatsop, where every year there is an annual Newfoundland Day to commemorate Seaman, his courage, his strength, his companionship to the Lewis and Clark expedition. The Newfoundland dog is also the mascot of Lewis and Clark College in Portland. The Newfoundland dog was originally bred and used as a working dog for fishermen in the province of Newfoundland, Canada. I can honestly tell you that when we have gone to schools and shared with the students the Lewis and Clark story, they're not only learning about the history of Oregon, but we bring our dogs in and they're so excited to learn about the dog's part of this journey west. And they are learning our state's history. It's amazing to us how many people we have met, adult Oregonians who do not know the history of our state. Some people don't even know who Lewis and Clark are. Many, many people, of course, did not know they had a Newfoundland dog with them. Many people do not know where the province of Newfoundland is, or what it is, or how to pronounce it. I believe that this Newfoundland dog can bring education and knowledge to the people of Oregon, as well as other states. Several presidents have had Newfoundland dogs in the White House, including James Garfield, Rutherford Hayes, and Ulysses S. Grant. Oregon is known for its beautiful lakes, rivers, and of course the Pacific Ocean. Because of the Newfoundland's strength and ability to swim, pull boats, and do water rescue, this dog appears to fit not only in the history of Oregon, but in its landscape as well. There are 110,995 miles of rivers in Oregon. Every year, many people drown in these rivers and lakes. Because the Newfoundland is known for water rescue, it could be used as a resource for saving lives. The captain of the Titanic had his Newfoundland dog with him on the ship. When the ship went down, the captain was lost, and the Newfoundland dog jumped into the ocean to look for his master. But he couldn't find him, and so he swam toward a lifeboat. And he is responsible for rescuing the passengers on lifeboat number 4. Few ships in the 18th and 19th century set sail without a Newfoundland on board. Their reputation for heroic water rescue was unparalleled. Like Smokey the Bear, who represents forest fire safety in Oregon, the Newfoundland can represent water safety. While the rescue dog organizations play a very important role and help many dogs find good homes, medical help, etc., we have a rescue dog ourselves. When my family was donating at the local shelter, my daughter saw a Cocker Spaniel who was found with his litter of 5 in a dumpster in a park. He was covered in maggots. His body was shaved. 3 of them died. One of them got a home, but no one seemed to want this little Cocker Spaniel. And my daughter called me and said, "Mom, I'm bringing another dog home." Ricky, as he has been named, came home with no hair, he was just shivering and he looked sad. And guess who took him and loved him and raised him? Our Newfoundlands. Ricky to this day is a Cocker Spaniel but thinks he is a Newfoundland. So we understand the importance of the shelter dog as well. But I believe that Oregon is a unique state, and it needs a unique dog to represent it. Not many dogs, but one dog. Newfoundlands are gentle giants who love their humans. They can read the emotions of people, which I can tell you when we visit cancer clinics and these dogs walk in, it changes the whole atmosphere of the room. They can read the emotions of people and make excellent service therapy dogs. There are many qualities, from water rescue to visiting cancer patients and babysitting children, makes them unique indeed. They are in the working group category with the American Kennel Club, and though the standard color is all black, they also come in brown, gray, and black and white. And yes, they drool. But this is also unique. The Newfoundland dog is already the Oregon State dog. We just want to make it official. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
So cute.
All right. Does anyone want to meet them?
We can do it after the hearing, yeah. Are there any questions? All right. Thank you very much. With that, I will close the public hearing on HCR 16. Is there anything left for the good of the order, Aaron? All right, we are adjourned. All right, we are adjourned. Nothing left for the good of the order.